Okay, guys, thank you so much for attending this session. It's an amazing feeling to have so many people here in the room, especially since this being the last TechEd ever. I don't want to make you feel sad, it's just a fact. You're part of something big, the final event of TechEd. So, this session is about web hacking, or hacking web servers, and why would you run a session like that? What's the purpose? Well, I'll give you some perspective. We have full-time employees that does incident response for a living because corporations, enterprises, and government agencies get hacked. Identity theft is growing, and one of the reasons is cross-site scripting. Things that doesn't look so dangerous when you display them on the screen, we're going to show you the effect of what you can do when you have a good cross-site and you're targeting a person. A small web vulnerability in a web application doesn't necessarily mean so much to a web developer. Well, there's something in my code. It wasn't perfect. We're going to show you that that could lead to domain compromise. One simple mistake. We're going to try to make you happy during this session, but not because of the problems in the world, just try to present it in a way that you will like. But the take home is going to be awareness. We want you guys to understand the challenges that are included in defending an organization and defending your own identities. There is actually a new EU directive, since we're here in Europe, and this is TechEd Europe, that is coming into power in 2016. And it's going to change a lot of things. The directive is only made for one reason. It's a data protection directive. The intention is to protect the citizens of the EU and the corporations. And they are really enforcing this. Corporations that doesn't announce an intrusion within 24 hours will be fined to an amount up to 5% of the turnover for the entire year of the company. So things are happening and they're going to affect us all. You're going to have good enough security, otherwise you can't be fined. That is to protect trade and the IP in the European community in order for Europe to stay strong in the competition with other parts of the world. And that's why the legislation is made. I just want to put things in perspective. So you can imagine there is a problem out there. Otherwise, that work wouldn't be done. Happy faces. So if you never met us before, my name is Marcus Murray. I work for a company called TruSec. And I run a team of incident responders, penetration testers, reverse engineers and stuff. And the reason I believe in doing this session is because I bring what I see every day to the larger community. I want to bring my insights into this world of IT professionals. I could stand up at Black Hat, I would tell other security guys exactly what they know already. Or maybe I could self-promote and show them the coolest thing I ever found. But this is about transferring knowledge from a large group of hackers, criminals, into the large IT pro community and developer community who are trying to create good applications and infrastructure. That's the purpose for me. Hassan, you want to present yourself or you want me to present you?
Well, I can start with, my name is Hassan Shkarti, work with TruSec as well. We've been working together for more than 15 years now.
Yeah, we're getting old, man.
Yeah. Actually, my first appearance on a TechEd stage was here in Barcelona, so this is kind of bringing back those old memories.
Yeah, that's a fun story, actually, because yeah. I kind of Trojanized your appearance here.
Yeah.
I came down and I told him, if I can't bring my friend, because he wanted to be a presenter at TechEd, then I'm not going to present. And I had a large audience like this one, so it was a good moment for extortion.
Mm-hmm.
So he was on stage then, and yeah. He's been there ever since, so it's been fun. It's been a nice...
What I do for a living is I've been a developer once upon a time, and then from there went on to the IT pro side and network management, network security, and then penetration testing, security assessments, and all that kind of things. And then...
Yeah.
Today we're trying to reach out with a message and trying to help our customers to bring in better security in their systems.
Yeah. But basically, he knows a lot about everything. Not like everybody else knows either a little or a lot about a little or a lot. Anyhow, so let's start with get this session going. I just want you to know this is going to be a live session, completely interactive. We're not going to use any PowerPoints. So if you want the material and the scripts and stuff we're using in this demo, we're going to present a link to SkyDrive later. Sorry, a OneDrive. I'm old-fashioned. So just so you know, you will get access to the data. And you find that short link for me. Thank you. talking about web applications, there is something called the OWASP Top 10. I'm not going to go through it, but these are like the top 10 largest issues in the web world. Basically, if you read it and if you understand it, it's all the same thing. It's all about filtering and controlling user input to make sure that it doesn't execute in a browser or in a server. That's how simple it is. If you can run solid code, write solid code, if you can have updated applications and browsers that will not allow unfiltered input or weakly filtered input into the application, then you will be safe. And that's a big undertaking, but it all boils down to that. So we don't even have to go through this. We're going to go through examples from the real world instead. And then you will understand that you should go back and look at OWASP later, if that's within your responsibilities. So we're going to kick this going with something we named, just for fun, Magic JPEG attack. Simple scenario. We have an attacker. That is me. Well, not in the real world, but in this scenario. And I'm going to attack a web server in a corporation. So this is classic web attack. And from there, I'm going to try to see if I can expand my influence over the network and eventually compromise the domain controller. That will put things in perspective. So, sitting on the attacker, and just to give you some nice reference, the attacker background is red, so you know where you are. I'm going to do a simple browsing to a web page. And this is taken from a real scenario, not too long ago actually, by one of our pen testers. This was during a penetration test. Could as well have been a real world attack. Luckily for them, this was us. They had a profile function in their website so you could actually upload your photo. And this was a high profile site. And you can, as you can imagine, being an attacker, you would love to upload something different than a photo to that site. If you could, for example, upload active ASPX content, then maybe you can execute code on the server. That is the ultimate goal for step number one. So the first thing you will do as a hacker is to start to see if you can somehow, I mean, you expect there to be some kind of filtering. In the best of worlds, the filtering could be super weak. I mean, maybe you could take in a shell, like, I'm going to take this away, that's for later. Maybe you can take some, this is the TS mini shell, maybe you could just upload this. I mean, that would be really bad, right? That would be the lamest thing ever. Sometimes, they actually look for the JPEG extension. Sometimes you could actually take this file and you could put JPEG in it. Hopefully not in this case. But this is actually, I mean, for a bad site, this could work. But obviously, they're not looking for JPEG to be there in order to upload it. And you can still upload a legit file. Like, this is a picture if you upload it. And then in the real application, you could, of course, watch the profile and you would see the photo. So this is fine. But we realized one thing while assessing this. We could take the anonymous JPEG and we could actually rename it to ASPX. Change it. And when we uploaded it and watched it, it would actually be stored on the server, but it would only be the readable text representation of that JPEG image. So that was strange to us, as long as it was a picture. So, again, trying to upload something else. This is one problem with hacking. Sometimes the web servers get a little confused when you upload a picture as a text file. Then you just kill it and start over. That's a good thing about web. They're used for simultaneous connections. So again, if I try to upload this, it will actually know, even though I rename it to JPEG. Let's just rename it to JPEG. Sorry. I'm a little bit... Let's do this anonymous here. Rename, no. TS mini shell here. Rename, even though I name it JPEG. So now it's really named JPEG. It knows it's not an image. So the application is reading the stream input from the image file to make sure this is a real image. Okay? So the challenge for me, obviously I can upload ASPX files, but the ASPX file has to be an image. How do you do that? So we did some trial and error using a simple tool called the EXIF tool. So this is just a JPEG. It's actually one of my favorite JPEGs. It's this one. Cute, huh? Me and the wolf. That came out bad. A picture of myself. It was because of him. Anyhow, that came out really bad. Anyhow, I wish I didn't say that. Is this session recorded?
Yes.
Yeah, my wife is going to laugh at me now. Anyhow, so obviously, if you look at this, there are some things here that is metadata or EXIF data. What we did was we put something in the attribute, the comment attribute. We put the content of our mini shell. So I'm going to rename this again. Just to make it default to Notepad. So this is the smallest script you could ever write to get the command prompt on a web server. We took this, and then we attached it to the metadata in the JPEG using the comment. So if we do EXIF tool and put the string in, I'm going to write it. And I'm going to create a new file so that we can see the difference. I'm going to take this non-JPEG, copy it, and rename it to whatever. And I'm going to run this code that basically just insert this script or ASPX code, C# code actually, into the comment field, and then it puts it in the TrueSecMagic.jpg. So if you do this EXIF tool on TrueSecMagic, you can see that the comment field is populated with this data. So let's try to upload that one. Okay? One question, is it still a picture? Well, let's upload it as a picture. Browse, TrueSecMagic, upload the file, look at the photo. It's a picture, it's getting uploaded. Take the file again, browse, rename it to .aspx, upload this picture again, click to watch it. Gonna have to find it. Upload. TrueSecJPEG.as.
TrueSecMagic.
TrueSecMagic. Thank you, Hassani. I could pretend I'm trying to do this out of suspense, but I'm actually trying to magically connect to this picture. And now there is something here. So if I write hostname, hostname, the name of the service DMZ100. If I do ipconfig, they're laughing. This is why I love my job. This is so much fun. This is the default behavior of IIS. I mean, this is a Windows Server 2012. So there's nothing wrong with it. It will just interpret ASBX code. The problem is not in the operating system. It's actually in the application, because it allows me to upload ASBX content in that is attached as metadata to a JPEG file. It's pretty hard to parse different formats. They could patch it from Microsoft's side, but it's not really a Microsoft vulnerability. I just want to make that clear. I mean, looking at it, there's going to be some garbage that's going to be ignored before. I mean, if you look at the file I created, it was some garbage, and then it was just the code. So it's actually a pretty decent server that can execute it, even though there was some garbage in the beginning. And that's HTML. It was just text. So it's supposed to write out text to the screen. It's also supposed to interpret ASBX code. So what would you do now? That's a good question, isn't it? But one thing I can do, being a hacker in this case, I can start paint my target red. Because this guy is now owned. So I have code execution on the web server. So back to this guy. Who am I? You can actually ask any computer that, and he will tell you. You're the IIS app holder account. So you don't have any privs. I mean, obviously, I can execute code, but I'm just a regular user, network service, basically. So I don't have so much privs. So what would an attacker go for now? I mean, what can you do with those low privs? Well, I'll show you. And I'm going to do it by running a free-to-use tool called Metasploit. And what I'm doing now is I'm starting a listener. So this is a listener sitting on the attack machine or a command and control server waiting for hacked servers and clients. Okay? So whenever a server is hacked or a client, then he will phone home to the CC server. In this case, this is the same one. Do you think this is getting cluttered? Maybe a little bit. So he will eventually phone home if I can execute a Trojan, a meterpreter in this case, a small Trojan built into Metasploit. So let's see how we can get one over there. I mean, I can do this in many different ways, but I'm going to make this fast because we have so many other things to show. So I'm basically going to run some PowerShell through this one. And it's going to be a simple PowerShell command. I'm just going to tell it to please run some .NET code. So this is PowerShell. Invoke .NET web client. Use the download file function. Go to my evil web server and download this evil file and put it in the temp folder of the operating system. So this is a very simple way. I don't need an uploader. It's built into Windows. So don't bother taking away all the FTP and TFTP clients and stuff. There are many powerful features that can do this. Looking on the other side, this is the server, actually. Usually we don't have the luxury of being able to look at the server from the back end, but this is a demo. So this is the back end, the app data temp file. Going back to the attacker, running this code, looking again. This is not funny. DMZ 100. This should be it. This is a SQL. This is not a SQL injection. This is a IIS temp. There it is, created now. I did some SQL hacks later this morning. So it's here, it's newly created. I mean, the time zone is obviously completely wrong, but if you compare it to the clock on this server, it's right. So I can upload code on this one. So can I run it? Of course. So let's see what happens when I run it. On the attacker, I go back, and I'm going to put them side to side so that you can see. And I'm simply going to do go to temp and run the 444.exe. Nothing special. Just execute some code on my system. And looking on the other side, you will see if there is a connection. Starting the payload handler, run this, sending stager, things are happening, and meterpreter session is opened. So it was a small JPEG upload vulnerability, but now what can I do? Get UID. So I'm going to go back to this. Get UID. I execute code now in a nice shell with lots and lots of features. I'm the Apple account, sysinfo. I'm on this Windows Server 2012, x64, DMZ100 machine. I can get a normal shell if I want to. So this is a shell. I mean, I can run any code I want here, dear. I can exit this, go back to the nice feature set. If I do a question mark here, these are the features I have. I mean, some of them I can't do because of my low credentials. But I can do a lot of things. So what would I want to do? Well, one thing I want to do is I want to look through this file system and see if there could be maybe some SQL connection strings lying around. That's the first thing you would do if you're on a web server, because there would usually be a backend SQL somewhere. Because my intention is to somehow reach backend resources. I mean, the SQL could be here or here. I don't know yet. Let's look. So just to save some time, I happen to know where to look. Isn't that strange? We didn't know this when we did this the first time, but now we know. So I'm going to search the inet pub folder, and I'm going to do recursive search. And this is a built-in search feature into Metasploit. So basically look for something that matches my pattern. In this case, I'm looking for C-sharp files. And there is a old backlog in ASPX, old CS file. There is an active file or whatever. Let's just try the old one. Why not? So cat, I'm going to read the content of this file. And looking through the source code, SQL connection thingy, this is an error connection string. That is why they probably made this old file. So private string, connection string, there is something that resembles an IP address. There is an SA account, and there is the password that you usually find among in environments where the SQL server isn't that smart, because that corresponds to the SQL server manual. Please enter a strong SA password. So this is actually it. We find this in like 10% of all the installations that has, you know, a few years of being out there. But I now know that there is an internal server with the IP address of 10.10.10.110. I know that it has the username of SA and the password of a strong SA password. So let's see if we can use Metasploit to attack, actually from here. Clean this up. If we can attack from this web server, targeting the SQL server, and we're just going to use the regular traffic channel, SQL traffic channel. We're not going to use any SMB connections, anything. My intention is to install a meterpreter into the SQL server because I have the credentials to do it. How hard can that be with Metasploit? Let's see. Let's find out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back, see where I am here, and I'm going to background this process, this meterpreter. So it's still running, but I am now back in the large Metasploit. I'm going to run a SQL payload in Metasploit. And this SQL payload will need some configuration. I need to give it the IP address I just found. Or sorry, I need to tell him where to call home, sorry. So this is the phone home address. This is the phone home port. It could, of course, be an SSL connection using SSL over port 443, but I'm not going to mind that. It's going to be time-consuming. This is the remote host I'm going to attack. This is the IP address I found in the config file, or the source code file. This is the password that I found. So it wouldn't matter if it was the most difficult password in the world. I can just copy and paste it. And then I'm going to export this. And this is, I mean, the SQL connection is just a text-based. It will only allow text-based information to traverse the wire, if you will. So you can't send a binary. So basically what you're doing is it's going to encode an interpreter and just use some scripting in order to put the stuff in a database and then turn it into a VB script and actually execute it on the SQL server. You don't have to worry about how to do it. It will do it for you. So interpreter session 7 is now open. And I'm inside. So if I do a sysinfo, I am now on the server 110. This is not the DMZ 100. I am now executing code on a Windows Server 2012 64-bit system. If I do a get UID, they're awfully quiet, don't you think? I am executing code under system. Why? Because this internal SQL server we're running in high privs. So this is a problem in the real world. The small vulnerability in the web server, which wasn't so important for this developer in this case, turned into a major breach. So now somebody owns a SQL server from the internet, sitting on the internal network. So what would be the next step? Back to the attacker. I'm still doing everything from the attacker on the internet. I'm just going to do it. Actually, I'm going to do some post-exploitation things. I am going to, let's see. No, I don't have it in that one. Well, I'm going to have to do it manually then. Doesn't matter. Mm. I'm going to do a PS to check the processes running on this system. And this is interesting because if you look at the processes, some of them are running in a local context, network service system. But just out of pure luck, someone from the domain is logged on, from the etarip domain. Someone with the name of mingdadm. And he's running processes just because he's logged on. So my assumption is, if I hijack his process, then I can become him by obtaining his credentials. This is called token kidnapping. So the process number was 1716. Let's do a steal underscore token. I love how they do this. Was it 1716, yeah? Mm-hmm. 1716. Stolen token with username etarip mingdadm.
It's got to be easy.
It has to be easy, right? So let's get a new shell. Now, being the domain admin, if this DADM account is a domain admin, I think I'm right. I don't know why, but I'm usually very lucky when I hack my own demo environment. So, if I do who am I, or I don't even have to do who am I, if I do just ipconfig, there are other ways to do this, of course, but this is a simple way, never fails an internal server. There's a DNS, this is probably a domain controller, right, internally. Do you ever set servers to non-domain controllers for the DNS internally? I don't think so. Obviously, the domain name is etarip internal. I mean, I could ping etarip.internal, and I would end up on the domain controller according to what the DNS would give me, according to the server records, right? So let's just do a net use, --10, 10, 10, it was 100, mm-hmm. --$C, and the system account could never accomplish this, right? A local system account on a computer. But command completed successfully. I can. So now I mounted the hard drive of the domain controller. And if you can mount the $C, you're admin. If you don't know that, you know that now. That's basic knowledge. So now I can do psexec, I can install stuff, I can do whatever I want, I can steal the hashes. But that is not the content of this session. We're going to focus on web. But I got myself from the SQL server because of stolen credentials, stolen tokens, I compromised the domain controller. So that puts things in perspective, right? And I'm happy the demo worked.
Yeah, this is basically how far you could eventually get. I mean, you could get this far. You could get stopped at the SQL server or somewhere else if that was better configured or with better security, so to say.
Yeah, I mean, this is real world. This is one of the hundreds and hundreds of vulnerabilities. We realized we were counting. We've done more than 1,000 penetration tests in my office, and we're a small company. So this is one out of 1,000 examples, just so you know. But this is one of the file upload examples that we could show you. So you need quality in code. Otherwise, eventually, your entire domain could be compromised. Mm. So that's the perspective of web application security. So that was a file upload. That's, I wouldn't say so exotic, but not many tools can automatically hack and find vulnerabilities in file uploads. SQL injections is another thing. So let's talk about SQL injections. Everybody knows about, I mean, the term SQL injections, I think. Most everybody's heard about it. Some people believe that SQL injections are like something that belongs to the past, that we don't find SQL injections anymore. Whenever we get the opportunity to do a full DMZ penetration test, in 70% of the cases, we find SQL injections. In many of these times, we can execute code just like I did now, 70% of the time. That means if you're not better than everybody else, you have them too. So let's do a quick read-up on SQL injections. What we're going to do is we're going to start vanilla, and then we're going to show you some mistakes when people put in filters so that you can circumvent them. Then we're going to show you something called a second-order SQL injection, just to show you how complex this stuff can be. When you have a front-end SQL server that is actually doing everything right, and you have a back-end SQL server that is also doing everything right, but you're synchronizing between them, and that turns everything vulnerable to SQL injections. That's how hard it can be sometimes. Why do we want to show this? Because this is the stuff we find. So this is the stuff that the hackers will find if they're professional enough. And this is the stuff that the tools won't normally find. So we think it's valuable to understand that this, the difference between understanding security and not could be lethal in this case. So again, we're attacking a SQL server using a vanilla attack. How would you do that? Well, you would start by, look for any input field. So in this case, again, from a real-world scenario, I'm going to kill this. I'm actually going to exit this. I'm actually going to kill the interpreter as well. Exit. No traces left. All gone. I'm going to back this. Nice. There we go. So, SQL injection. I have a server here. Has a username and password. This is the classic demo. Being the attacker, you need to do an assumption what the code behind could be like. So this is a typical example. I can make it a little bigger if you want to. There we go. Your assumption is that it would look something like this. This is real code. This is Sevler code. But wherever the application accepts user input, normally this is where I would put Marcus. Can change the color to make it more easy to follow. Oh, whatever. Okay, gotcha. So Marcus. Then this would be passed on to the application, of course, right? So what if I could change the functionality of the SQL string, because this will execute on the SQL server. So what if I, for example, could do something like this? Let's do Marcus, and let's close this, so it's still a valid statement. And then let's, for example, do a semicolon, because I want to do a new statement, and I want to execute something, like xp underscore cmd shell, and then I want to, for example, do ipconfig, or whatever, ping. And then I wanted to ignore everything else afterwards, so I will ignore that, like this. This would work. So this is vanilla, and I'm going to show you what it looks like. But I'm actually going to fail on purpose, because this application is hardened. But this is what it would look like. So normally, if you can do this, then you know for a fact that this server is not only vulnerable to SQL injections, it will actually execute code, because this stored procedure, xpcmd shell, will execute stuff on the operating system. And this is only one example. There are others, SPOA create and others. This is the one that we do in demos because everybody kind of understands it. Okay, straightforward. So doing this, going back to the application, on the attacker, entering this, then I need to put something in here. I can see that it went too fast. It didn't really execute. This would expect xpcmd shell, so normally you would do something else. You do something called wait for delay. If you can't execute code under xpcmd shell, you would instead try something that is like this. Wait for delay, and then you would do 00 colon 00 colon 10. And then you would see if it was fast or not, because it's supposed to wait for 10 seconds. It didn't. It didn't wait for 10 seconds. So this is not happening. So normally they would do some kind of filtering today, but this is a valid statement. So if this were vanilla vulnerable, it would work. So in this case, they actually did something. This is from a real case. They did some really lousy filtering. And I'm actually going to show you the code behind on the web server. And it's, I wouldn't say it's tragic, but if you work in this field, it feels kind of tragic because it's so damn lame. I hope the application developer that did that code is not here. Could be bad for my career. Anyhow, if I open this up, oh, let's open it with Notepad instead. No, sorry, it's the login. It's the login code, yeah. They have some manual filtering taking away the comment field. Because you need to put in dash dash in order to comment out the rest. And if you don't comment out things, then the application flow will break. So it will only return a break and you will never be able to execute your SQL code. So this is a typical approach. But this is a typical problem that an attacker will enter. There is some filtering going on. I don't know what. But if I can figure out that, okay, they're filtering out comments, what a hacker will do, and this is a generic thought process, he will think about if there could potentially be some other way of doing something equal to double dash. Like he would try to figure out if there's something else that you could do instead of doing semicolon. Or something else instead of whatever. So this is the take home. And I'm going to give you an example. This is .NET code. This is C# code. So can you do commenting in C#? Yes, you can. So if you want to comment thing in C#, this is from the MSDN. Then you can do this for single line comments and this for multi-line comments. So all I need to do is understand that, well, maybe I can try another method. And it will work. So let's try the /star instead. So let's, instead of entering that, let's enter this, semicolon, wait for delay, and then put the /star, and then in the password field, put this. Because they still make an assumption about what the code will look like. So I would normally try an error for a while. But let's try it. Let's go back to the attacker. Clear this out. And then I'm going to show you step by step. This is wait for delay using a functional syntax. So this is a double line comment. So I'm going to have to put something in here and something in here. And again, if you want this stuff, you're going to get it. We're going to put it in the OneDrive if you want to play with this stuff yourselves. But if I do a login now, you can see that there's a timing thing. I know this is executing SQL functionality on the SQL server for 10 seconds. Now it's done. Very controlled. If I do an xpcmd shell, this is the right statement. It actually executes. Why does it execute? So that was wait for delay. Nobody stopped me. I was surprised too. So ping localhost is dead. That went too fast. Can you see it? That's not a ping with 10 pings. So let's see if we can enable xpcmd shell. And we can look at the code behind. You can go to the SQL server. This is the internal SQL server. Where was it on the... Oh, man, it's... No, I'm actually on the local. This is a DMZ SQL server, so I think this is on this guy. Yeah, so if I go to the management studio here, and I do, for example, sb underscore configure xpcmd shell, I can check the configuration. Xpnfigure, if you mark it, you have to mark it all. It will say xpcmd shell does not exist, or it is an advanced option. It's not on this server. So let's install it on this server, right? So I'm just going to run some simple code. This is built-in functionality. It's not a vulnerability per se. I'm going to do run spconfigure and make it show advanced options. That will put xpcmd shell visible for the server. I'm going to use reconfigure to make it execute. Then I'm going to do spconfigure and enable xpcmd shell, and then do reconfigure. Using this statement with the perfect formatting. Login, boom, and looking on the other side, just to show you the effect of this, if I run the same thing again, xpcmd shell is running. So basically what a SQL injection is, it's just a remote configuration tool for SQL servers. That's what it is. It's not as nice of a GUI, but it's usually for free. You can do it remotely from anywhere. It's very nice, through a web proxy. So that's what it is. If you think of it in that term, you really understand what it is. That's what it is to us, doing penetration tests. So now xpcmd shell, now we can ping localhost. See the ping, executing code. This is a ping, it will take some time. Especially since I did N10, so it did 10 pings. So even though this is what they call a blind SQL injection, so I don't get any output, I'm just going to use timing. So last but not least, what I would normally do, I would go do the same thing I did 2 seconds ago. I would run the 444.exe, same PowerShell statement. I need to escape it differently in order for it to execute through the SQL. If you want the scripts, I will give them, and I will run it. I don't have time for that now, but I will do this exact same thing I did with the file upload, because I can run code on this system. Okay? What do you think? Scary? Good. I have never had a more quiet audience. I usually make you laugh and stuff. It doesn't work this time.
It's just the first day of TechEd, you know.
Does anyone have a question? We don't have so much time for questions, but we have like a minute. If you have a question, you can step up to the mic over there. And that's going to count for the entire session. If you have a question, you can step up. Whenever we can take it, we will. If it becomes too many questions, we're not going to take them.
Hello.
Yes.
So in that example, the login is running under the SA account?
Yes, it is under this circumstance in order for the xpcmd shell to be, that you can enable it.
So maybe that's the first line of defense, is to have your
that
web
is
application
the first line of defense. Absolutely.
Running under some other account.
That is absolutely it. The problem is that the coder is not normally involved in the configuration of the SQL Server. That's one of the problems. He will develop this code and he will give it to somebody else or sell it, and then a third party will do this. So it's two problems that have to work together, but these guys will not necessarily ever see each other or talk to each other. Also, you can still enable, maybe not XPC in the shell, but other store procedures, and you can set the security of them locally, so sometimes you need these features for other applications, so it could still be there. But again, if you don't have the problem, then it's not a problem. If you don't have the vulnerability in the code, it's not a problem. That was a good question, my friend. You can come forward and pick and choose any flavor of this chocolate. It will be here for you. Take one. You can take it now if you want it. Somebody else is going to steal it otherwise. If you want it, you don't have to. It's the best chocolate ever. No, it's not, but it's Swedish, so we're very proud. So, going back to the demos. Hassan is going to talk a little bit about SQL enumeration, because sometimes it's not so straightforward. Sometimes you can't just do a semicolon and execute code. And I'm going to give that to my...
Number one.
My friend, the wolf.
Number one.
Which number are you, brother?
One.
You're number one. Of course you are.
So what else could we do? I mean, if we have a foothold of this kind, we can obviously execute statements. I just have a similar system set up here. A web application that's vulnerable, I can execute local commands. Well, I'm obviously not getting anything of that output back to my web application. So how could we do about that? I mean, is there any way we could get that information executed by, for instance, a system command and then give it back to our application so we could get that information? As an attacker or hacker, I would be interested in that kind of activities. So let's just take a quick look at that. What if I could take that info, the result from the executed command. If we just execute the who am I, we will figure out what that service is running as, what kind of identity. So we just execute that one. And not only executing that, I'm actually creating a table, a temporary table of my choice, defining the content of that, the columns and the characteristics of them, and then inserting the output from the execute statement into that temporary table. So a couple of statements I'm running together, back to back. Let's see, there we go. Oops. There, yeah. So let's just push this into our application. And then execute that one. So whatever that was, we ordered the system to execute. Now, we know that is stored in that temporary table we just created. So as long as our session goes, we still have information or access to that table. So let us go back and then try to figure out how to get out that information from a temporary table. So if I start enumerating the table I'm working with, this is just a very simple statement to say, hey, filter by one, order by the first column and the result set. This is just, I'm adding an order statement to the SQL query. Why am I doing this? Well, I'm trying to figure out exactly how many columns there are in the result set, how many columns are being returned at the output from this statement. So I will be doing this until I get, well, this works and the next one would not work. So I just increase this one until I get that kind of information back. In this case, we have something that is called SQL injection that is error-based. So the error-based, the error tells me, hey, the order by position number 4 is out of range. So the result set does not contain 4 positions. You need to just bother about the first 3 ones. Okay? So now we know that there are 4 positions, 4 different things returned by the result set. So let's combine the temporary table information with the original statement that has been executed to give us the news information. So just about knowing about the SQL statements, the SQL as a language, and then combining different statements together. So in this case, I'm doing in the union select. I'm just giving me the top, the first record in that temp table I'm interested in. So give me that first line you got. Union that with the previous result set, and then give it back to the application. And it says it's the anti-authority system account that we're running with. So this is the who am I, the result from the who am I command. I've just piped it into a temporary table, and then the next time I queried that temporary table, glued that together with the original request, and there we go, we have it in our application. So you need to know a little bit about SQL, a little bit about the how to execute system commands, how to behave when storing data temporarily within your SQL server and so on. So it's not about the pure knowledge of hacker tools and okay? What else could we do with this? Well, of course, we can dump all kind of other things. We can just try. I mean, the union select is there. So just try, just by guessing table names. Well, is there a table name test? Is there a table name users? Is there anything like that? So just union select wherever we find and push it together with the original statement. So it says, well, except operator must have equal number of expressions. We did actually a union select stars to give me everything. Now I need to find out the number of columns the same way, the same story. And once I found that, I do union select. Give me the digit one. Combine that with the username field and the password field from the users table. I don't bother about the ID.
Yeah, you could just brute force it.
Yeah. So just go ahead and start guessing the name of the columns and the number of the columns until you find it. And then there we go. So it says, well, there is a username admin with this password. In this case, it happens to be password stored in clear text in that user table. And there is a Bob user with this password and Napoleon and so on. So a little about combining these different SQL statements until we find something that is more useful than something. The application was obviously intended to provide us with some news articles in this case. So let's see, that's another example. What I'm doing here is that I'm pulling information out of the master, one of the schema tables. So I'm looking for the master sys SQL logins, and then I'm getting those passwords stored. These are internal passwords stored within Microsoft SQL. These are encrypted, of course. I need to look for the different seeds or the different keys that will be able to help me to decrypt these kind of things. So this never ends. You can go for forever. I'm just going in with this type of testing and then until you harvest all information in that database. And probably if you can have access to other databases on the same SQL server, that would be very possible to start looking into them as well.
And especially thinking about the new world with the cloud. I mean, we tend to buy not only infrastructure as a cloud, it could also be the fact that we're consuming applications in the cloud. We see this a lot when we do penetration tests. Like one of our clients, it could be a high-profile client like a bank or something, they're consuming a new feature in the cloud that some of their employees are using. It could be like a banking application. So they want to test it before they're going to use it because they know that their data is going to be stored there. So after negotiations, we're allowed to do the penetration testing. We find something like this, a SQL injection, we can extract databases from other clients as well. So that's the problem. The fact that a lot of legacy applications that has historically been sold as internal applications for banks and stuff, they're all migrating to the cloud. They're becoming cloud aware by us putting a web front end in front of them. They're still the same applications. So if they're weakly coded and they want a fast migration, then you would probably have problems there because it was intentionally made for internal use only, initially.
So just to give you another example, another a little bit more advanced example maybe, this is something we discovered in a customer case. We were looking into a web application. That application had synchronized databases between an external one and internal one. Now, what they were doing is that they were not relying on the SQL Server synchronization services itself. So they were doing it on their own. So they had a system set up, number six. A manually created system. They bothered about reading information from one of the SQL servers and pushing that to the other one using their custom application. So this was a white box test. When we started looking into the details of that synchronization application, we simply discovered that whatever input we were pushing into the external application that ends up in the external database, that was properly handled in terms of whitelisting, blacklisting, and so on. Actually, what they did here is that they were bothering about escaping all content. So they stored it properly escaped. So we couldn't do any SQL injection on the external application. Now, the synchronization application they created, that one took the information that was escaped and managed actually to unescape it before pushing it to the internal SQL server. So once those statements were executed on the internal SQL server, they were actually, the SQL injection we pushed in the first position was active in the second position. And all of a sudden we could execute arbitrary SQL statements in the internal SQL server because of that customized synchronization engine they created themselves.
And I will tell you right away, this is something that you don't normally find by brute forcing or by just trial and error. This is something you usually find because, I mean, the number one example is that this is either open source, so you can just get the source code and read it and understand and find the vulnerabilities, or the other big example, this is a purchased solution. So the hacker can actually buy a license or install a trial. And he can reverse engineer it and look what it's doing. So again, this is not something that a normal hacking tool would find.
So let's just show this. This is the user Bob, and the user Bob has a description, just me. So what I'm doing here, I'm injecting a SQL statement. There is a search function in the news, and everything you type here is kept as search history. That information is distributed among the databases. And then the thing I search here will be synchronized to the internal database. But I'm saying update users, set description, the password of the internal admin is, and then I'm going on with another SQL statement, select password from users. You see there, where username is equal admin internal. And then where username Bob. So I'm adjusting the description field of the user Bob and adding the internal admin user's password to that. So this will not be any error on the external website. Go ahead and searching for that as a filter, and nothing specific happens here. So what really happens, if I look at the user Bob, I actually get the password of the internal admin is that. And this information is simply there because this synchronization engine or the synchronization application they created, let me just show you that one. It's actually going all the time here, and it's just pushing information forth and back. So if we check the SQL server, this is where the search history goes in the internal database. And if I just refresh that one, you see the...
It's marked. You marked.
Oh, sorry.
You're doing the same mistakes I did.
Yeah. So I did something else. I don't have that. So that search history has already been synchronized to the outside world. Let me just repeat that again. Just go back, my news, and perform the search again. Well, actually, that will be very broken. As you can see here, it doesn't matter what I do, I will end up with some weird content in here. Let me just do another statement before that. Let's just update that back to the original one. Going back to Bob, I have just me again, and then going back to the internal SQL. I'm still getting something very weird here.
I want to help you, but the only way I can help you is diverse them by giving them chocolate or something.
Yeah. Well, anyways, the broken thing here is the synchronization engine they built there themselves. If they were relying on the built-in synchronization engine, this would never happen. So they were extracting information, unescaping it, and executing the new statement with that extracted information, and there we go. We're reintroducing the vulnerability again.
We have a question.
All the examples you've shown here, they are based on the fact that the backend application is directly executing SQL statements. Today, if you create a modern web application, you often use frameworks such as Entity Framework and Hibernate, etc., which protect you from that kind of SQL injection. Am I then completely safe from those kinds of attacks, or are there other attack vectors in those cases?
Well, not 100%. You still, depending on the framework you're using, depending on how the backend is looking like, what else is happening? Let me just show you a small example here again.
It's a good question, though. You deserve a piece of chocolate, my friend.
Yeah. Let's go to the login.
Take one.
This is the login page. We do have a vulnerability in the login page. Let's just prove that. I'm just telling, hey, could you wait 10 seconds here? So given that, giving anything in the password. And apparently it's still counting. So we do have a vulnerability in the login page. Now, in this case, the vulnerability is not in the application. The application is behaving properly. It's used prepared statements. It's parameterizing everything, so everything is going just perfect. The vulnerability here actually exists in the backend system. So in this case, the one I just showed you, the vulnerability is in a stored procedure on our demo database in here. So this is the login stored procedure. And as you can see here, the framework I'm using, the MVC itself, is helping me doing parameterized or prepared statement. But I'm reintroducing the vulnerability within the stored procedure and going on concatenating these different parameters. And there we go. We have SQL injection again.
So it's a typical example. I mean, you rely on two things, the modern frameworks that can help you and a good coder. You could actually rely on one thing only, a really good coder. Mm. But you cannot rely only on a good framework. That's the take home. You need to think.
So you need to sanitize all input. You never trust any input anywhere in any stage in your application unless you sanitize that yourself and you know you stored it properly.
And again, it doesn't matter if you are a programmer or not. I mean, this is good knowledge for everybody, because this, even though you only purchase application or install them or maintain them, this is stuff that you should be aware about. Mm. You have to question yourself. Should this be tested? Should we use some kind of process in order to make sure that we only buy the good stuff and not the bad stuff? You know?
So that was SQL injection.
Yes. So we have one small section left, and that's going to be client-side attacks with cross-site scripting and cross-site resource forgery. I'm going to show you the impact of that. And I don't want you to leave the last minute, because we're going to let you know how you can obtain Hassan's or my laptops. We're going to save that for last. So if you want to leave, you're going to miss out your chances of obtaining one of our computers filled with hacker tools and stuff. Mm-hmm. So then they're not good for production environments, I'll tell you that.
We love to show live examples, and if we're not crossing any red line, we do that, show that example. Anybody here from Italy? Okay.
One guy?
Yeah.
Is that two? Yeah, now the pride is coming.
Good. So this
are
is...
Are you proud of being Italians? How many of you guys are from Italy? Still only two.
This is the information of Technology Institute in Italy, which is apparently bothering about different registrars. You could go there, register your domain name or whatever that is. So I'm just going searching for registrars. Give me the list, please. And then give me everything that starts with B or includes B. So far, so good. I see that B, the letter B, is passed here as part of the URL. So what if we start playing with this a little bit? Let me just say H1. So that information is simply passed from the URL directly into the whatever echoed back to the user as part of the application. So whatever I push on that URL in that position, apparently those HTML tags are just taken by the application and just reflected back to the user.
So basically, by sending somebody a link in an email, you can rewrite the entire look and feel of this application. They will think it's a legit thing if they trust the nick.it. And this is only an example.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not hacking them, we're hacking the user experience. And we're going to show you how we can escalate that into something way more nasty.
So if I do JavaScript, script alert, just doing some zero there, and just closing the script tag.
And it's kind of funny, he's using Firefox for this demo, because Firefox would by default execute this stuff. If you have Internet Explorer
This is Chrome.
Or Chrome.
Okay. Nothing happens, apparently. This is IE. IE gives us a small message down here. It says, we prevented cross-site scripting on this site.
Of course we can do encoding and stuff like in the SQL example. We can try to circumvent the filtering of these applications, and sometimes we will be able to. But even picking the right browser would actually help you to protect you from these attacks.
And Chrome is doing exactly the same thing. It has an XSS auditor, cross-site scripting auditor, that will block that type of misuse. So what else can we do with it? How dangerous could this be?
Yeah, let's make it as dangerous as we can. Why not?
I am an attacker sitting here. Let's see, just minimize my web windows. Just starting this very nice tool. This is XSS Exploit Framework.
Like Metasploit for XSS, if you will.
This is an OVAS project. So let me just configure my server. I'm running with my local IP address. This is what I'm supposed to have. ipconfig, I have the 128. Okay, so I'm starting up a web server listening on port 8080 on my attacker machine. Okay. Now, I got now some information in memory, which is supposed to be, let me just show you that. That URL, or that piece of script, a script tag that I can insert wherever there is a cross-site scripting vulnerability. And that one is actually loading a script from my tool. See the source, my IP address, and then the script name. Okay, so let's have a victim. Let's have a suitable victim. There
victim
we go.
Victim on PC.
That's victim on my PC.
The victim is yellow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a warning color.
And then let's just start a browser of our choice. Go to our application. In this case, we have I already pre-cooked this, our target application, as you can see it here. I just added the whatever that piece of code and the URL. That's my server.
So this could either be a link in an email, or this could be a stored cross-site scripting on a page where a user can somehow put code up there.
So let's observe what's happening with this user. I'm going to my application here. I'm doing XSS exploitation. Just send a message.
You could come up with something cooler. You're hacked.
It's just a test. Okay. So apparently I'm remote controlling his browser. That's very handy. What else could we do? I could steal cookies. I could load files. I could start a keylogger within that browser session, anything else, just JavaScript, shell, or all of that. I could sending Firefox add-ons or doing Metasploit browser vulnerabilities and all the kind of nasty stuff. So a very nice thing we can do here is something we call a Fisher attack. Okay? I don't know why they should just Facebook.com, but let's try it. And then if we tell this guy that, hey.
I think you have to do it after you did
that. We can do it again. And then create that, please.
You send him to Facebook.
So all of a sudden, Facebook pops up and it says, hey, you're not logged in anymore. And what are our users going to do then? Oh, that Facebook, they always kick me out. I don't know why. So just go ahead and type your username and password and re-log in again. Do you think they are starting looking at the address bar, if this is the right Facebook or not? Yeah, just scroll down here. Yeah, so they go ahead typing their username and their password and trying to log on. And what happens? Well, that information is passed in real time to my attacker application or that framework tool.
You don't have to worry. It actually missed the first character, so now nothing bad will ever happen to you. No worries.
Just push that again and again and again until you get it.
I think this is kind of scary, even for me, when these tools are arriving. That, I mean, you're entering a page that has a cross-site scripting vulnerability, and all of a sudden you're logging into a fake Facebook page and giving them your credentials. And that's reality. That's the effect of cross-site scripting. Just as an example, then we have all the key logging and stuff, and if your browser is vulnerable, you can upgrade into a Meterpreter agent and do the trojanizing thing I did. But that's how bad it is. So we have two more minutes. That was the last demo. We're going to tell you some things before we close this session down. First of all, we want to promote our session we have tomorrow. Do you know what time it is, Hassan?
It's 5 o'clock.
Okay, it's 5 o'clock. So 5 p.m. tomorrow, look for our hardening session on hardening Windows. This is the SkyDrive. So if you want to take a photo of the screen, you have the URL right here. Oh, they turned this off? I turned it off. Who turned it off?
Number six.
I want
that was
to know
a, that was a
attention.
Challenge, by the way.
Yeah. So that's the short link to the SkyDrive. You're going to find all scripts and stuff. We're going to put them in during the week. So if you empty it on Friday, everything will be there. If you go there now, it's going to be some stuff in there. But on Friday, it's going to be full with everything we've done this week. So we want to promote this one. We want to promote the session tomorrow. I'm going to wait one more minute so you can take a photo. Then I'm going to show you something else. Hassan and I, we did a very successful tech at US a couple of months ago, and we actually raffled out our laptops. And it was crazy. We had 1,300 people fighting over our laptops. We gave them away. So this time, we're not going to give away our laptops again. It took so much time to reinstall them. But I have a friend. His name is Mike. He's in a booth down there. They're called Beyond Trust. I'm not promoting them because we don't make any money from them. We're not getting anything. But we tricked them into buying two laptops for us. So if you want them, you fill this out and you give it to their booth, the Beyond Trust, booth 17, and then you will participate. We will be there raffling out our laptops tomorrow, okay? We're going to put all our cool tools on there and stuff, but it's not really our laptops, but everything's going to be there. We're not doing that mistake again. So if you want these, you can, after the session, you can, and I'm going to put a lot of this stuff out here, so you can take them, fill them out, go down to the booth. We're going to be in that booth after this session today if you have questions for us. And one last thing. The whole training application we did, because this was a training application, was actually made by an Italian guy. His name is Fabio. But if you're interested in training and stuff, you can contact us or take a business card or something, because we do this kind of training and awareness all over the world. So if you're interested, you can contact us. And another thing, if you like the session and want to fill up the eval, we would really appreciate it, this being our last tech ed. If you didn't like the session, it's okay, you can still fill it out, because there are no more tech eds, so it doesn't matter to us. We can't get kicked out. So guys, we hope you enjoyed the session. Thank you so much.
Thank you.